Much of Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election hinged on a law that was drafted more than 100 years ago called the Electoral Count Act. The law has been considered vague and poorly written almost since the moment it was written in the late 1800s. And the January 6th committee has spent the past few weeks showing how Trump's team tried to exploit it. Now, a bipartisan group of senators say they have a solution aimed at avoiding another election crisis. Joining me now to talk about a really big day in election law are two experts on the subject. Rebecca Green co-directs the election law program at William & Mary. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey.
And Ned Foley directs the election law program at Ohio State. Hey, Ned.
Hey, good to be with you.
So let me just start there. Rebecca, how big of a deal is this new draft legislation?
So here's how I like to think of it. A lot of us are planning family trips this summer, and imagine that there was a law in the books requiring you to travel by horse and buggy. That is literally what the Electoral Count Act is like. So we might disagree about whether it's better to travel by car or train or airplane, but we can all agree that any of those choices are better than a horse and buggy. So, you know, representatives from both sides of the aisle have spent a lot of time debating the best mode of transport here. And some may disagree on the particulars, but get me in an air-conditioned motorized mode of transportation. That's how I feel about it. And that's how important I think reform is with respect to this law.
Ned?
This law is a really big deal because it's designed to prevent distortion of the process and really taking away the votes of the people. I mean, the risk here is that partisan actors will try to subvert the process, whether they're in the state government or in Congress. And this bill is well drafted, in my view, to prevent any kind of subversion of the true result of an election.
So going back to the 1887 Electoral Count Act, can you go into specifics there, Ned? What are the kind of specific issues with the law as it is on the books right now?
Yes. Well, you mentioned just how poorly written it is, and it is from the horse and buggy era, as Rebecca said. But here's the scenario that I'm most worried about, which the current law allows. If you have a rogue governor who wants to subvert the outcome of the popular vote in that governor's state, the combination of that, you know, rogue governor plus one chamber of Congress wanting to go along with the governor could defeat the will of the people, the will of the voters. I mean, that is very, very dangerous. And that's why reform is so essential. And this bill would foreclose that possibility.
So digging into the specifics of this new legislation, one problem with the previous law was just how easy it was to muck up the process with frivolous objections. Rebecca, how does this draft legislation address specifically the objections issue?
Very basically, the 1887 version of this law required that only one person from each chamber object to a state's electoral submission.
Out of the entire Congress, one,
correct.
One person.
And so you can imagine that that sort of opens the door to troublemakers to, as you say, muck up the process. So the revised statute would raise that threshold to 1/5 of the members of each chamber, 20%. So significantly more people would have to object to an electoral slate. And the other thing it does is it clarifies the grounds for objection. So you can't just object because you don't like the smell of the thing. You actually have to have a reason. And it specifies exactly what those reasons have to be.
So my ears kind of perked up at the threshold, because even getting to that 20% number, 121 Republican House members objected to Arizona's results in 2020. Is that threshold high enough to actually prevent a party from jumping in and saying they have an issue with the results?
This is a line drawing problem. And, you know, some people may argue that it should be higher, and some people may think that 20% is too high. I think in the end, we're better off drawing a line and all agreeing that it should be higher than one and sticking with where the consensus is, which I fully support.
Ned, do you want to jump in there?
You have to pick some number for the threshold. 20% is a good number, but you want to combine whatever that threshold is with this other point that there are certain types of objections that are improper, whether the threshold is 20% or 25%. And the fact that this bill does both, I think, is what's really important.
Another key point here that was has been focused on a lot in the January 6th hearing is the role of the vice president. I know that Former Vice President Pence was under a lot of pressure to have some role in affecting the counting of the Electoral College votes. Rebecca, how does this draft legislation make clearer what the vice president's actual role is here?
This is a direct result of the language being really fuzzy in the 1887 statute. And so this proposal would cut through, you know, miscommunication or vagueness or ambiguity. And it would just say very flatly that the vice president or the president of the Senate, which is usually the vice president, that the role is totally ministerial. It just sort of says that in black ink. And so I think that will sort of quell any confusion or mischief with respect to the vice president's role.
Ned, can you zoom out here a little bit for us in terms of looking ahead at 2024? How much does this proposed legislation, if it gets passed, how much does it quell your fear that the will of the voters will be subverted in the next presidential election?
Yeah, substantially so. I mean, I think this is a key reform that's necessary. I mean, I think it's still responsible to worry about the possibility of people trying to do mischief. And you know, the law has to account for human behavior, and human behavior may try to disobey the law. But this bill is well written to address these two potential problems. And problem number one is that a Secretary of State, a governor, somebody in the states might try to manipulate the result. And there's a bunch of key provisions in the new bill that really stop that from happening. And I think that's really important. And then secondly, because as you said, we've already seen members of Congress themselves trying to make mischief. This bill also really does a good job of addressing that. So if you're not sleeping well at night about the 2024 election, I think you can sleep a lot better if this bill passes.
Rebecca, were you going to jump in there?
The gold standard when it comes to our election process is that everybody agrees on rules before elections happen and that those rules stay in place and can't be changed after elections happen once, you know, we know sort of which rule favors who. And then, you know, also the idea that those rules be clear and unambiguous. And I think this bill accomplishes both.
Just kind of how urgent is it that Congress passes this law this session?
Now is the time to do this, partly because Congress may change who's in control after the midterms. But even more than that, again, the role of the governor under the current law, the 1887 law, sort of bizarrely makes a governor of a state a tiebreaker if in a joint session of Congress the two chambers disagree. And so, you know, that depends on who's the governor in Pennsylvania and Michigan and so on and so forth. I mean, those are contested races in this midterm. It's much better to take that out of the equation and have a good, sound procedure that isn't so dicey, and to do that now, because after the midterms, you do know who's won those governorships, and then one party is clearly advantaged by the existing system. Hmm.
The proposed plan was created by a working group that included a number of Republicans, including many of those who supported President Trump in 2020. Are you guys surprised that so many Republicans were willing to come to the table on this, considering some of these people may need Trump's endorsement going forward?
I'm not at all surprised, and I'm thankful for this collaboration. I think, again, you don't know at this point which rules are going to benefit which party. And so this is the perfect time to come together and at least establish what those rules are, ensure that they're clear, ensure that there are dispute resolution processes if disagreements arise, and sort of set this all in stone before, you know, we run into another election.
Jump in, Ned.
It's to each party's advantage now, you know, behind the veil of ignorance, as Rebecca said, to lock in place these procedures, because as much as people are focusing on maybe one party trying to make mischief, after the 2024 elections, either party could make mischief under the current system. And so that's why much better to have both parties now agree to eliminate all possibility of mischief.
That's Ned Foley, an election law professor at Ohio State, and Rebecca Green, an election law professor at William & Mary, speaking to us about new draft legislation aimed at shoring up Electoral College procedures. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, thank you.